This is so unique that it's very difficult to forecast what's going to happen to the global and the U.S. economy.
We have put money aside for emergencies, and I see us using those funds.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. Hope you're doing well during these weird times. On this episode, we speak with economist Hugh Johnson about the coronavirus's financial impacts, and I'll talk with Albany Public Library Executive Director Scott Jerzombek about library services during the pandemic. Well, the pandemic, of course, has shut down and altered many aspects of the global economy. To discuss what might lie ahead, our Jim Lavula spoke with Hugh Johnson, Chairman and Chief Investment Officer of Hugh Johnson Advisors in Albany.
This is so unique that it's very difficult to forecast what's going to happen to the global and the U.S. economy, particularly the U.S. economy, over the course of the next year or two. Nevertheless, most of us know a lot of the variables, and we take a real good shot at trying to estimate what's going to happen. I think what's interesting is that what's happening to the U.S. economy is very much condensed into a very brief period of time. And when I say brief period of time, it's an unusually brief period of time. It's clear that the U.S. economy contracted in the month of March, not so much in January and February, where the economy was still expanding. And it's also clear that a great deal of the contraction or recession in the U.S. economy is going to occur not only in March, but also in April. And after that, the U.S. economy is going to try to reopen. States are going to do that on a staggered basis. But we'll start to see some, I don't want to say positive, real positive news, but we'll certainly see a pickup in activity as we move through the remainder of the second quarter and clearly through the third and fourth quarter of this year. I would look for positive growth numbers in the third and fourth quarter. And as we move through 2021, I think each quarter will be positive. Keep in mind, we're not going to get back to a level of economic activity or output in 2021, or I don't think so even in 2022, not to the levels that we saw before this all started. And we're certainly not going to get back to the levels of employment that we saw in 2019. And that also I'll have to wait for, I'd say, to be optimistic, late 2022. So it's going to be a long road back. It's going to be a slow road back. You're going to see the manufacturing sector of the economy be first, the services sector, particularly things like tourism, restaurants, bars. You know, that's going to be a slow go. And they'll come back, but they'll come back very slowly. And the same is true of employment. So you know, be prepared, be braced for some bad numbers for the month of April, and then some better numbers, but not great numbers, as we move through 2020, 21, and 22.
And Hugh, you said that this pandemic is certainly unique, but you found that there are historical markers occurring that could give us some insight into what's ahead. What are those markers, and what do they indicate to you?
Well, you know, the one marker that I think everybody should keep in mind is that when you look at Spanish, Hong Kong, Asian flu, or you look at all the epidemics that occurred since 1980, the one thing they all have in common is they all end. And they do end, and they have different timelines. And to some extent, we can affect that sort of timeline that each one does have through some of the measures that we take to try to contain this thing. You know, testing, you hear about contact checking, really important, and needless to say, a vaccine could make this the whole timeline very, very different, shorter, and not as severe. So that's one thing. But I have crunched the numbers, so to speak, to see what might happen to things like consumer spending and inflation. And just as you might suspect, consumer spending is going to slow significantly as we move through 2020. 2021. These are not going to be particularly good numbers. They'll get better, a little bit better over time, but they'll be negative for the second quarter and a little bit positive as we go third, fourth quarter. And the same thing's true on inflation. I know everybody worries about inflation. They worry that inflation's going to go higher because there's so much money being added to the system. Inflation's not the issue right now. It's really deflation. You have to worry about low inflation, not high inflation. In time, maybe high inflation, but not now. And then there's stock prices, and I think stock prices, everybody's concerned or worried about them. I don't think we're seeing the bear market lows. We may have seen the most severe in the bear market, but these things last longer, so I think we may have a little bit more time, but we'll probably get to lows either in the third quarter of this year, first quarter of next year, sometime in that time frame, and it won't be significantly. They will not be significantly below current levels. I would say 15% is the risk.
And with figures such as 30 million Americans applying for unemployment aid since the outbreak began and the nation's GDP falling by nearly 5% in the first quarter of 2020, why are stock indices on the rise as of late?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been asked that question continuously. How can you reconcile the performance of the stock market, which has been a little bit better over the course of the last, say, month, with the numbers that we're getting on the economy? And the answer to that question is important, and that is the stock market. Investors tend to look ahead, and they're looking well beyond the second quarter. We know we've already reflected or discounted, I guess is the technical expression, the second quarter, and investors are looking at the third and the fourth quarter, and what they see is, let's say, somewhat promising. So they're buying stocks now in anticipation of a recovery in the economy and, most importantly, earnings. Not a strong recovery, but some recovery from the dismal numbers that we're going to see for the second quarter. Stocks are looking ahead. And the important thing, Jim, I think, which is really a good observation, important observation, is investors tend to get it right. And they're now telling us third and fourth quarter better than the second, a lot better.
And gas prices are low across the country as the cost of oil has dropped. How does the global oil market play into all of this?
You know, it's very important because oil is a big commodity, an important commodity to the global economy. And you would think it would help, and it certainly does help. The offset, though, is that a lot of production, you know, a lot of people, a lot of output for the U.S. economy is in the energy sectors, on oil, natural gas, and a lot of producers are shutting. The prices of oil have come down to a level where they just can't make any money at it. So producers are shutting down production. So you're going to see two things going on. One is a shutdown in production, which is not good news for the U.S. economy. That shows up in the numbers. At the same time, you're going to see prices of oil coming down. Prices at the pump coming down, that's good news for consumers. But, you know, candidly, consumers just don't have a strong appetite to go out and do things like drive around anymore. And consumer confidence has plummeted, and therefore consumers are going to be pretty much doing what they're supposed to do, which is stay at home until they're told that they can go back to work or can go out. And so, you know, yes, there'll be trade-offs here, but I think the bottom line is that it's probably going to the trade-offs will neutralize each other. It will not help the U.S. economy. The other thing I'd say about oil is that we have unusual periods when oil prices go down very low, gasoline prices go down very low, and same thing we have is prices when they go up abnormally high. You get big swings in the price of oil based on, you know, political conditions in the world as well as conditions in the markets, the oil markets. And I don't think we're going to stay down here very long. I think that the price of oil will eventually get back to what I call equilibrium price, and it's meaningfully higher, something around $40 per barrel.
The COVID-19 pandemic has certainly impacted supply chains, especially those that go across international borders. Do you think this will push businesses and governments to insist on greater domestic production and reliance in the future?
Oh, you bet. The one thing that might come out of this, or one of many things that are likely to come out of this, important is the, I don't want to say the end of globalization, but it's certainly every company that has supply chains that reach to places like China is going to readdress those issues. And I quite frankly think that companies themselves, not so much but at the direction of the federal government, companies themselves are going to respond by bringing production back to the U.S. And I think that the whole concept of globalization, which drove the economy and drove a lot of the variables for so long, that's going to come to an end. I don't want to say an end, but I think it's going to be certainly a lot less. So you're going to see a lot less so-called globalization and supply lines that reach throughout the world. That, I think, is a thing of the past. That's one of the many things that I think are going to change and change importantly because of this pandemic.
And taking into account all of this information and likely more, Hugh, what is your advice for consumers and investors in the near term?
I think that the most important thing that I've said is that it's going to end. And I think consumers should, first of all, everybody should follow the rules. Secondly, I know consumer confidence has declined and consumers are reluctant to go out and start to buy. I think that's understandable. There's nothing wrong with that. Consumer balance sheets have been decimated. They've been decimated because a lot of people have lost their jobs or they're certainly furloughed. And as a result of that, I think they're going to be cautious in coming out, and that's just fine. Investors is a little bit of a different story. Yes, I still think this is a bear market. Yes, I still think the bear market will go lower. Yes, it has the possibility, in my judgment, as I crunch the numbers, maybe 15% lower. And you should still play on the defensive side. Don't jump back into the market yet. But I would say that the prospects for the market are not that bad, are reasonably promising. So I certainly wouldn't eliminate stocks from my portfolio. Yes, I'd play it on the defensive side. Yes, I'd emphasize dividends for now. But think about some of the companies that are going to do well when this bear market and economic recession ends. There are a lot of companies that are going to prosper and do very well in the next bull market, and you should begin, and the emphasis, the operative word is begin, to maybe add some of those stocks to portfolio. I don't want to give you any names now, but they might be in the technology, consumer services, and consumer discretionary parts of the market. Those are parts of the market which are kind of economically sensitive, or they do well when the economy starts to recover and rebound.
All right, now let's get to my interview with Scott Jarzombek, Executive Director of the Albany Public Library. Scott, let me start the way I'm starting all interviews these days. How are you doing during this pandemic?
It's been a bizarre balance of doing my work, working from home, which is not something I'm used to, and also at the same time, trying to balance the schoolwork of a 7, an 8, and a 10-year-old, which has been a struggle.
How are they doing?
They're doing okay. Luckily, you know, we're lucky. You know, we have a broadband connection and we have the equipment, and they're used to that equipment. So for the most part, I think they're doing well. I actually think my one son is adapting to it better than a regular day of school.
Do you want to see kids go to summer school this year if it's possible?
If it's possible, but only if it's safe, only if it's safe for parents, only if it's safe for caregivers, only if it's safe for the teachers. I think that's an option, but, that's going to be really, really difficult. And, you know, one thing people have to understand that in the district, in a city like Albany, a lot of the caregivers, are people who are older. I have a lot of friends and family who the grandparents are the ones who pick the kids up after school. So, the people who are most at risk from this are engaged in their grandchildren's, their nieces and their nephews' lives. And that's a danger that I think the state and the school district have to take into consideration.
Okay, so let's talk now about what the library is doing during these times. I think it's fair to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there was already sort of a digital transition underway in libraries around the world. As more material has moved online, libraries have had to decide what their physical spaces are going to be for in the future anyway. How is that playing out now that the buildings are, by executive order, closed?
So, it's interesting. We, in our strategic plan, had actually been moving towards doing more and more basically programming online. It was a discussion that we had. We piloted it by doing our own podcast, which now we're almost doing weekly. So this was something that we recognized, that the library is more than just four walls. It's a service, it's an organization, and we need to recognize that some people, due to their work schedule, some people due to their... just due to access reasons can't get to the public library. So we were moving in this direction, and plus we were seeing like a 12 to 18% growth in our use of our ebook and our e-material collection as it was, and that was outpacing our physical book circulation, or starting to outpace our physical book circulation. So this was already, not a transformation in addition to the services we were already providing. So when this switch got flipped for us, it was basically we had the plans in place. We just had to kind of get ahead of the plan when it came to producing stuff, which I'm blown away by how my staff are doing an amazing job of just doing story times and craft programs via our YouTube channel. And it's really great. And, like I said, it's a direction we were moving, but not as a replacement, but more as just a new service to add. And I think that's not going to go away in the immediate future. Even, when we're back to having our doors open and possibly doing programming, I think we're still going to be providing this online content.
Are people using it? Have you seen that those numbers are holding?
Those numbers are holding and they're growing. The only metric we did not see a significant reduction in was program participation. So the amount of people who are watching our videos and engaging in book discussion groups, it's close to, it's fairly robust and getting closer and closer to what we were seeing number-wise when it came to in-person participation. So, again, I just don't see this going away. I think it's just going to be a part of the work that we do moving into the future.
What kind of role does the library play in working with the city school district here?
We're partners. Part, again, of the most recent strategic plan for APL was to align a lot of our educational programming with the school district and the state's educational guidelines, and we've been doing that. We have a community partner, someone who oversees our community partnerships, and that person is always in contact with the school district, making sure that the programming that we're providing is kind of in line with what the school district wants to see in regards to their students.
How about the sort of after-school approach that the library offers? It's been said libraries are one of the only places left in American society that you don't have to pay a fee to go into. You know what I mean? Kids are gathering there after school. There's all kinds of social interactions that happen in your spaces. Where is that happening now?
We don't know. And that's, there are several things that we do for the community that we're really struggling, and not just Albany Public Library, but libraries across the country, are struggling. Those roles we play in the community where we are that community space. And for us, it's something that we want to get back to, but we know the only way we're going to get back to it is if we follow the protocol set by, the experts and do it slowly. So right now, libraries across the state are working on reopening plans that look like the reopening plans of retail establishments and other and businesses, that it will be slow, it will be deliberate, it will be with protocols in mind, it will be done in a way that if we have to roll things back, we can roll things back. But our job is information and providing information to the community. Sometimes the best way to do that is by your actions. So we want to show the community that, like everybody else, we want to get back to where we were, but the only way that's going to happen is if we all work together and do it a smart way.
You'll have to enlighten me on this. Is the Albany Public Library budget in any sort of jeopardy? Is it affected in any way by this?
So we're a separate, we're what's called a school district library, and that means that we're a separate district, and we're even separate from the school district. It's only called a school district library because it's the same boundaries as the school district. But we have a public vote, whenever we raise our budget. So right now, no. I mean, we are concerned about other revenue. We collect pilot payments. We collect revenue through CDTA navigator passes and faxes and some computer use and some printing. So, we do see some financial headwinds coming in the next, one or two budget years. And they will be significant, but I think we're a pretty sound financial institution. We have put money aside for emergencies, and I see us using those funds. And hopefully, in the next one or two, fiscal years, we will see a little bit of a correction and we will not have to worry about it as much. But there will be a financial impact for us, just like everybody else at home, just like every other institution in business.
Not long ago, you made the decision to do away with late fees. What was the idea behind that, and has it had the effect that you hoped it would?
Yes, we saw people coming back to the library who we hadn't seen in years, and we saw material be returned to the library that hadn't been returned in years. Getting rid of late fees was all about being equitable. We would go to school, we would do school visits in school classrooms, and students would basically say to the librarians, you know, the library card isn't free. My mom says we can't afford it. And it's because, and I'm a parent, you lose a book for a couple days. Almost every parent I know has had to pay late fees. And so if you're a child who's going to a library on your own, you don't have that dollar or two to pay that late fee, you're not going to return the book you have. And sometimes you're not going to return to the library because you're just not going to be able to use it. $5, $10 in late fees seems like, a minimal amount of money to pay for library service. But for some people, that's a meal. For some people, that's a week's worth of bus to get to work. And, you know, we definitely saw it as kind of an unreasonable barrier for library use for members of our community who need it the most.
A lot of organizations and individuals are thinking about how they might want to change some things when life goes, quote unquote, back to normal after this pandemic. In your mind, what should the Albany Public Library learn from this entire experience?
Well, I think we're learning a lot of things internally, making us a better organization when it comes to communication. Our staff now meet, this is a staff of 146. We now meet weekly to kind of give a 15 to 20 minute overview of what's going on at the library and what services we're providing. And we're doing that through conferencing software. It's so much easier and it's great communication. So I think a lot of businesses and a lot of organizations are going to use this opportunity to learn how to better communicate all of the things that they do to their staff and to the public. I don't see life at the library returning to normal for a significant amount of time. But I do see us finding new and interesting ways to serve the public. And, like in anything else, that those things aren't going to change. They're not going to go away. The thing we've talked about most is book delivery. There are still people who want physical books, and we're trying to figure out new ways to get books to those people. And things like curbside pickup, a lot of libraries are experimenting with. When we believe it's safe, we're going to start a program like that. And I see that as something that's going to last for a significant amount of time. I do think people will use us differently, but at the same time, I think people will also appreciate us because they'll realize we're that community space that they really want and need. And if we can figure out the protocols to keep our spaces clean and neat and safe for everybody, then we're going to continue with that.
Scott, what are you reading to get through these strange times?
Oh, man. I am listening to Bruce Springsteen's autobiography on audiobook, and I've been reading. I'm a post-apocalyptic, I was very much into dystopian fiction, post-apocalyptic fiction. I'm not touching any of that. I'm reading. I'm turning into my mom, and I'm reading a lot of mysteries. I'm a big fan of Walter Mosley, so that's not new for my reading. I've been rereading his back catalog. I just finished White Butterfly, which is a really great book, and The Trouble is What I Do. He's a great mystery writer because it's a little bit more straight. It's a little bit more kind of the urban landscape, and there's a little bit of history to it. And since I ran out of those books, I am now reading other mystery books, and that seems like it's going to be my genre for a while, because once you live through the post-apocalyptic landscape a little bit, makes it a little less attractive to spend your downtime experiencing it.
I don't know if you're allowed to say this, but what about the plague? Has borrowing of that book gone through the roof?
I'm gonna look. That's my one of my favorite books. I thought about rereading it. I have a heart. I actually reread it last summer. I'm gonna.
You're ahead of the curve.
And The Sinner with the Earth Divides, which is one of the first, it's credited as one of the first post-apocalyptic books. And it's also, it's very much with what's going on right now. I have a copy of it. Like I said, it's one of my favorite books. It's sitting on my shelf. I don't know if I'm ready to read it again. And I hope in a year or two, I'm going to, revisit a genre I love and be able to enjoy it again. And maybe enjoy it with a little bit more experience and forethought.
Scott, anything I didn't ask you about that you want to add on here?
Well, one thing that I think is really important, and, you know, this is one thing that I really want to get the word out about, is we're still answering, you know, one of our jobs in the community is to be the information specialist for the community. And we're still answering reference questions. We're doing it by phone and by email. So, you know, if you need a phone number, if you want to find out if somewhere is open, you know, if you just want to hear a voice on the other end of the phone, you can call 518-217-5601. Again, that's 217-5601. That's one of our many reference numbers. You can give us a call and you can ask questions. You can find out about resources. If you're stuck on a few things, you know, that's something that you can still hear a voice out from the library that's a trusted source to provide information for you. And I think that's really important for people to understand. Those numbers are manned from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. So give our staff a call and get assistance. You can also email askalibrarian@albanypubliclibrary.org. That's askalibrarian@albanypubliclibrary.org. We'll be able to answer reference questions there as well. That's almost 24/7. And reach out to us through social media if you are online. And if you're having problems getting online, all of our locations, the Wi-Fi is on, and the Wi-Fi is reachable from the parking lot. So you can sit in your car and still get on our Wi-Fi. So if you're hearing this and you want to get online and you don't have access at home, please go to one of those locations and you will be able to get online. It's a pretty robust connection. We're still here. We're still serving the community. And, you know, we just want people to know that people are still using us, but we want more people in the community to use us as well.
That's Scott Jarzombek, the executive director of the Albany Public Library, and he's held that position since 2014. Scott, thanks for taking some time and thanks for what you're doing.
Thank you.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.